Hi, and welcome to the podcast. My name is Vicky Santana, a 500-hour registered yoga teacher. I've clocked in over 12,000 hours in the yoga room teaching, and I'm here to answer your questions so you can take your practice into your own hands. Now, a lot of the things that we as yoga teachers say can be really confusing because you go from one teacher to another teacher, and you might actually have information and cues that are diametrically opposite of one another. This week, I'm here to answer one of my students' questions, but first, a little story. A new bride was putting a roast into the oven, and her new husband realized that she had cut off the ends of the roast. And her husband asked, "My love, why did you cut the ends off the roast before you put it into the oven?" And she said, "Well, I really don't know. Why don't you go ask my mom?" So he went and he asked his mother-in-law, and he asked, "Why do you cut the ends of the roast before you put it into the oven?" And she said, "I don't know. That's what my mom always used to do." So then he went to grandma and he asked, "Why did you cut the ends off the roast before you put it into the oven?" And she said, "Oh, because when I first got married, my oven was so small that I had to cut the ends off of the roast so I can fit it into the oven." And that goes right into one of the top questions that I had this week from my student. If you've ever taken my class, you know that I am a fanatic about the biomechanics of the body, how we activate. So I always say, I don't teach you what to do, I teach you how to get it. And we don't get into poses, we build poses one step at a time. The question was, "Vicky, you're so exact with your cueing on how to build poses that when I go to another teacher and they give me different instructions, I feel confused, I don't know what to do, and I want to know which one's right and which one's wrong." Now, that's a really valid question because as the practice of yoga becomes more and more universal, as it continues to evolve, everybody has a different way of teaching it, communicating it, learning it from a different place, has a different experience in their own body, and the degree of education that they have in regards to anatomy, physiology. These and other variables go into how a yoga teacher ends up cueing her poses. So there are four different things that really play big into how a yoga teacher cues, moves the body, creates their classes and stuff. The first one would be lineage and style and school of where the yoga comes from that they learned, and I'll go into all those details in a second. The second one is their personal experience in their own body and how long they've been practicing yoga. The third one is professional experience. You're going to find very different cueing from a one-year teacher to someone who's been teaching for 14 years. And their education. All of us start out, if we get accredited, with a 200-hour registered yoga teacher certification from Yoga Alliance or a certified yoga teacher, if we're doing it outside of Yoga Alliance, the body of knowledge of yoga. And then they may or may not go to 500-hour. And then they have the opportunity of going to an experienced 500-hour. 500-hour teacher, 200-hour teacher, that means how much formal training they've received that does not state how much time they've actually been teaching in the yoga room. But when I refer to education, I also refer to the education that they have taken on their own after they've gotten their certification or certifications. Did they continue their education in philosophy? Did they continue their education on anatomy and physiology? Did they add on any teachings when it comes to pranayama, breath work? Biomechanics, mobility, neurology. And I'm naming just a few of the things that they can learn after their certification to widen and deepen their breadth of knowledge. So let's take one at a time, and we'll start with lineage. Lineage is the school of knowledge of that particular branch, and then style of yoga. And as we go from branch, school, and style, each one has a highlighted teacher from where the practice, the style of practice, rooted from. So although all of yoga sprouted, all the physical yoga sprouted from hatha, that's the root, the form, the original form of the practice. We literally have hundreds of different styles of yoga and teachers that create the root of that style that's being taught to other teachers to teach. Perhaps you've heard of Bikram. Bikram was one of the first teachers, the first celebrity yogis that came to the United States and really brought physical yoga and its popularity to the West. But a Bikram class is very different than, say, an Ashtanga, which is another style of yoga, which is very different from Vinyasa, which is very different from Power Flow. Each of these primary teachers, root teachers like Krishnamacharya, like Bikram, aside from having their own style, they also had their own philosophy that they brought into the practice. So if you were to take a class from Paramahansa Yogananda, that would be very, very different than something that came down from the lineage of Krishnamacharya, which is considered the father of modern yoga. We also want to keep in mind that yoga, just like anything else, evolves. It changes. And it also becomes diluted. If you've ever played the telephone game where one person made a statement, whispered into someone else's ear, by the time it went all the way around the room, the message that the last person states is probably really different than the original statement in its context, maybe even the words or the message that it was trying to deliver. So the same thing happens in the practice of yoga. Yoga is 6,000 years old. There's no way that anybody right now is teaching the original version of yoga because that was 6,000 years ago. I mean, that's probably the mother of all telephone games. And as much as we want to convince ourselves that we're holding on to all of the traditions of the practice of yoga, it's not possible. Everything changes, evolves, and becomes a thinner or a different version of the original. Here's a physical example of how it can be very, very different. In the Bikram school, we're taught to lock our knees in standing poses. These days, you probably won't find a vinyasa teacher that'll tell you to lock your knees because we understand that for most people, when we tell them to lock their knees, there's a pretty good chance that they're going to hyperextend their knee. And although they may find temporary strength when they lock their knee in that pose, over time, we're actually creating weakness if we constantly hyperextend our knees. In the Krishnamacharya style, standing half moon is done with the fingertips just floating above your mat. In other lineages and styles, the hand, the fingertips are directly onto the mat and pushing the mat away. Originally, Warrior One was done with the prayer hands overhead together. These days, we have the option of bringing the arms shoulder width apart because bringing the hands together overhead for many of us is really challenging. So that's the first one, lineage, school, style. All of those dictate how we do things, which cues we give, and it kind of gets muddled up, especially when we start taking a class like Power Flow that's a hybrid of Ashtanga, Hatha, and Vinyasa. So I can really see how that can get super confused because there's no one particular lineage that Power Flow is coming from. It's coming from all three of these. And sometimes when we have fusion, we have confusion. So now we're coming up to the second one, which is what is their personal experience in their own body? Someone who's 20 years old is going to have a very different point of reference as a teacher than someone who's 40, 50, or 60 years old, especially if they've had numerous injuries or illnesses. The older teacher has a perspective on what happens when the body doesn't work right, or it gets broken, or it needs to be fixed, and then what's the recovery. And those are the moments, actually, that teachers start becoming super profound in their teachings, especially. They get to understand biomechanics, recovery, firsthand, and that really does help make a much deeper teacher. Now, I'm not saying we all have to be injured and battered and have a million and one surgeries to be able to understand the human body. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is someone who does have that life experience is much deeper because it goes into every cell of our body. is a much deeper way of learning than intellectually or academically, because it also brings about a certain level of compassion and understanding because they've had the experience. On the other end of the spectrum, if you have a teacher that has never had an injury or is really super flexible, or they're able to backbend what appears to be effortlessly or handstand effortlessly. By the way, I don't think any teacher does anything effortlessly. I think everybody works at what they're doing, and we're looking at the results of a lot of hours of work. But with that said, someone who's younger, or even if they're in their 50s and they haven't had any injuries, then that teacher might have a higher level of fearlessness because they haven't experienced it. They haven't experienced limitations. So from their personal experience in their body, there are no limitations. There is no fear of getting hurt because they haven't gotten hurt. So there's nothing that they need to fear. Each personal experience in each yoga teacher's body is unique to them. I think what I suggest to students is to line themselves up with someone that has the experience that they need. So as an example, if you are a weekend warrior and you've had shoulder injury, knee replacement, hip replacement, I recommend going to a teacher that understands biomechanics, anatomy, injury, recovery, and all the other things that come along with injuries and recovering from injuries. In other words, pick a yoga specialist that matches your needs instead of one that performs the way you wish you could perform, or the way maybe that you want your practice to look like. And that right there is a really challenging statement, because it means we have to put aside desire, we have to put aside ego, and we would best benefit from someone that literally does understand the mechanics of where we are physically as a student. So the next variable is their professional experience. So here's something that maybe we don't talk enough about, but how someone practices yoga does not always directly correlate to how well they're going to teach the practice of yoga. And we find this in all different types of industries. I used to work in information technology, and we would have these geniuses that could write code. I mean, they could literally work for NASA, but they wouldn't be the ones that we would hire or promote to manage a team, because their glory was in that precision, in that beauty of code that they could write, but maybe their people skills were not where they needed to be because that's not what they had focused on. That's not their fire. That's not what they devoted their academic life and then their professional life too. And a lot of times, and I watched it over and over again, you would have these geniuses and then they would get promoted only to find out that they didn't have the management skills needed to manage. And they eventually either had to step down or they stepped out of frustration. Every yoga teacher brings gifts, value to the yoga room. Every single one. But I'll say it again, a teacher that's been teaching for a year is going to bring different information than one who's been teaching for 5 years, than one who's been teaching for 10 years, than one who's been teaching for 20 years. Mind you, I'm not saying one is better than the other, because we can pick up bad habits along the way. We can become robotic in our cueing and not advance our knowledge and say the same thing over and over again. But I will say, when a yoga teacher is first taught, they're taught primarily the cueing from their teacher. So if their teacher had unclear types of cueing, then their trainee is going to pick that up and they're going to take it into the yoga room. And it takes time, even years, to stop cueing like your teacher, you know, keeping the ones that work because they're sound and they make sense to you and they fit in your body, and then creating your own out of experience from your body, your practice, and from further studies, which I'll get to in a moment. So I kind of said a lot there, so maybe we break it down. The combination of their professional experience, their own yoga practice experience, who they were taught from, how they were taught, all of those go into their box of tools that they use when they teach. Everybody has a different experience. Everybody has different years of experience. Everybody has different types of experience. So that will greatly influence how they cue. I was taught in a very theatrical, moving, inspirational way to teach. And it was wonderful when I was at that particular studio in that environment. However, I soon realized that when I left that studio and went outside of that bubble, some of that cueing just didn't work. It was too flowery. It wasn't specific enough. It didn't tell the students how to activate the body. So I essentially had to retrain myself, relearn, and it took a decade, and learn even deeper of how the body works as a biomachine to create universal cues that applied anywhere I taught. Okay, now the final thing that affects how a teacher teaches and how they cue is their education. The thing about certifications for yoga teachers is, although we do have a body of knowledge, Yoga Alliance, there's no one way to teach teachers to teach. I think Yoga Alliance does a really good job at creating standards to keep us in check, but a lot of schools don't use Yoga Alliance and they may not be going by those standards. So if you have a bunch of different standards, you're going to have a bunch of different results. And before I get any flack for that statement, I'm not saying that one is better than the other. I'm saying that the lack of standardization of certification will also lead to different ways of cueing. In general, there's a 200-hour, 300-hour, and then a 500-hour certification for yoga teachers. Each one teaches yoga at a different depth. The 200-hour is foundational, and it gets a yoga teacher started. The 300-hour adds more to it. What it adds on is going to be very dependent on the teacher, and then the 500-hour is going to go into more depth, more philosophy, more breath work, more cueing, more sequencing, more hands-on adjustments. But having all of those certifications myself, I know that more self-study is absolutely necessary in the areas of philosophy, neurology, breath work, biomechanics, mobility, narrative, cueing, physiology. And to say that there are thousands and thousands and thousands of hours in every single one of those is not an exaggeration. And then in conjunction with their education, most teachers have something that they really focus on. And universal cueing, mobility, anatomy, physiology, cueing based on how the body works, that might not be their jam. And you might think, well, Vicky, they're teaching us yoga poses. They should. No, not necessarily. Not everybody wants to learn the granular specifics of how their body works. Those students that do want that, they'll go to teachers that are very passionate about biomechanics, how the body works, how we breathe in poses. And those that are not that interested in that granular level of knowledge go to other teachers. So that's why I say that every single teacher brings something fantastic to the yoga room. It's up to the practitioner, honestly, to decide what they want from their practice and to find teachers that they really vibe with. Students that are looking to flow and have a good time for the most part, I might not be the teacher for them because I am obsessed with how the body moves, how to be really focused and build poses instead of get into poses and then switch and using momentum. Two different philosophies of how to build a yoga practice. One is not right, one is not wrong, but I can totally understand how it can get really confusing for students when teachers are cueing the same pose completely different ways. Here's another thing that I want us to keep in mind. For each yoga pose, there is 200 plus cues on how to get into the pose, stay into the pose, deepen ourselves into the pose, and then exit out of the pose. I'm not sure that it's possible to find two teachers that are going to cue yoga classes exactly the same, because again, for all the things that I listed, lineage, personal experience in their body, professional experience, and their education, and also what they're focusing on, what is their end game. For me, I learned a really long time ago that I could help one student in the moment and assist them in the pose. But what I would find is the next day the student would come back and they kind of have the same alignment and setup. I realized that with my cueing, with my voice, I can help 50 people at one time find that place, that strength, that alignment in their body instead of just doing it one student at a time in a huge class. So because that was my goal, I went on the trek of really polishing my cues over time, really making them short, brief, clear, because my goal was for most people to understand how to get into a pose. And that goes back to the beginning story. The new bride, without understanding why her mother's mother cut the ends off of the roast, she continued to do that without knowing the actual why. So as you go through your yoga path and you encounter different teachers, I recommend listening to what the teacher has to offer, doing it, exploring it, and finding out if it fits your body, and then find out the things that fit your body best. We can take away great points from every single teacher. But then, if you find some conflicting information, ask the teacher why they stated it this way. What was the end game or the end purpose for that? What's the mechanical reason for moving the body a certain way, pushing a certain way, breathing a certain way? So try this. Ask your yoga teacher why they're cueing the way they're cueing and why they said the thing that they said. Instead of asking them how to get into a pose, ask them, why did you tell me to do this? What were you hoping the experience would be for me? And hopefully they have a really clear answer for that. And if not, they can go back and get the answer for you, but ask why. Don't be the new bride that cuts the ends off the roast just because her mom said so and because her mom's mom said so. The beautiful thing of knowing why and what the potential result is for any yoga pose will almost automatically align you into how to work your body. Well, that's it for today's installment. If you're interested in learning how to teach yoga, I'm starting up a new sesh May 11th in South Florida, Evolution Yoga. And I invite those that want to teach yoga, those that are not sure whether or not they want to teach yoga, and those that definitely do not want to teach yoga, but they want to deepen their practice. They want to understand why they're doing the things that they're doing in their yoga practice. You can find me on www.vickysantana.com or on Instagram, vickysantana.yogatraining. Follow me there for more hints and suggestions. And until next time, everyone, namaste.